Welcome back to another episode of the Strength and Speed Podcast. I'm your host, Mudgear Hannibal Race Pro and Strength and Speed owner, Evan Preparis. No guests with me today. We're going to be talking about Al Ula, Tough Mudder Infinity, the biggest prize money race in OCR history. Before we get to that, though, a quick word from this episode's sponsor. This episode is brought to you by Manscaped. I just picked up the Manscaped Performance Package 5.0 Ultra. Came with a whole bunch of great stuff. Nose hair trimmer, another hair trimmer for any part of your body you want to use, downstairs, your arms, your chest, whatever you want to do. It's got a whole bunch of different guards on it, and then it's got like a super close guard, so if you really want to get really close to the skin, you can do that as well. I like to shave my body nice and clean before a race, right? So when I get in the water in and out of obstacles, the water just kind of falls off, and honestly, it worked great. Also comes with a aftershave for, again, for downstairs, and a deodorant for downstairs. Also came with a t-shirt and a pair of boxers, so that was kind of a nice touch as well. But great product, great for if you're looking for a gift for someone, great if you're looking for a gift for yourself. Also came with a travel bag. It's like a whole big kit that is great for your OCR athlete or just for someone else in your family, maybe someone whose nose hairs are a little bit too long, whatever you want. Give them a reminder to kind of keep things nice and trim. We've got a code for you guys. You can get 20% off and free shipping with the code ULTRAOCR at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use code ULTRAOCR. All right, let's jump into today's episode. So I wanted to jump in and talk about Al Ula Tough Mudder Infinity, the largest prize money race in OCR history. I was going to bring a guest on, but I didn't want to wait any longer. I just wanted to get the information out. I know there were some issues with some of the coverage of the event, so I just wanted to talk about my experience both traveling over there, running the race, traveling back, because it was like a whole big ordeal in a good way. So I flew over there. I actually had a layover in New York. I got to see my family, and then I flew into Dubai and had about an 8-hour layover there before I flew from Dubai into Saudi Arabia directly Al Ula. And what was cool about that was a lot of other athletes were flying in on Thursday, that same day that I was. So when I landed in Dubai, I actually started seeing OCR athletes in the airport. Got up to meet up with Andrew Losh, one of the up-and-comer ultra guys. I've seen him at a bunch of World's Toughest Mudder type events, also a Missouri guy. And for me, that was kind of like where the experience started, where you actually got to like hang out with all these high-level OCR people in kind of like a small setting, which is really cool. And then from the plane from Dubai into Al Ula was like 50%+ OCR people. And not just like random OCR people. I'm saying it was like the best of the best OCR people all on one plane flying to Al Ula, Saudi Arabia for this race. So that was just kind of a fun experience going in. For anyone who's doing a lot of traveling for OCR or international travel or traveling for work, I would recommend the Priority Pass. So through my being in the military, I have a American Express Platinum card, and then that gives me a free access to something called Priority Pass, but you can buy the Priority Pass separately. Essentially, it's $100 a year, and it gets you into lounges all across the world. So when I travel to Qatar, Dubai, or when I travel for work, a lot of times I'll use that, and I don't actually buy any food in the airport. I use that lounge access to get in and get free food, essentially, at these places. And then also, it's typically a lot less crowded. There's typically seats. There's typically access to outlets. So it was just a much better traveling experience. So if you're going to be traveling a lot for racing or for work, I would recommend getting some of those lounge access. You know, it's an initial cost up front, but in the long run, I actually think it saves more money. All right, so we fly into Al Ula. I did plane side visa. Had a little bit of issue getting my plane side visa. Once we landed, it was asking for a PIN for my credit card. It wasn't working. Anyway, long story short, I travel with more than one credit card just in case something like that happens. So I have a MasterCard and an Amex, and then I've got essentially my debit card. And I ended up having to use the debit card to gain access for the plane side visa. And normally, I'd recommend buying a visa in advance online, an e-visa ahead of time. Just with the last minute travel, I didn't want to like start that process and then have it still be kind of like saving, loading, whatever, processing while I checked in. So if you're going to be traveling overseas, make sure you check the visa requirements, and then I also recommend doing it in advance ahead of time. So we got to the airport. The cool thing was being at the airport, Matt B. Davis from Obstacle Racing Media was there to greet us, like right at the outside of security, along with a Tough Mudder employee. So it was pretty cool to like walk out and immediately see someone you know. They had live music playing in the Al Ula airport. It is a very small airport. I think there's like two gates there. So it was really small, but it was brand new, looked super nice. And then in addition to the live music, they had essentially Arabic coffee for free in the airport. So already off to a great start. Tough Mudder employee there. They're like, oh, we're going to be heading to the camp in about 15 minutes. So just kind of hang out, go to the bathroom, relax, make sure you got all your bags, etc. And then from there, we loaded a bus. Again, all the athletes on one bus. Drove to the camp. It was probably about 45 minutes, 50 minutes away. And we had dinner on site. So all of our meals for the entire trip, when we kind of booked everything, was kind of included. So breakfast and dinner every day was included. You got like a little coupon that you cashed in. They had two housing options on site. There was the camping option, which is like a smaller tent with no electricity. And then there was the glamping option, which is like a bigger stand-up tent with electricity. If anyone's going to do something like this, go to, you know, Spartans World Championship, if they do the Middle East again, or if they do Alula again, I would highly recommend the glamping option. It was much better. I know some guys that went into the camping option and then ended up upgrading to the glamping option because they thought it was better. I had a tent with four beds in there. The first night, I was the only one in there. The second night, Friday night, the night before the race, Joshua Reed was one of my roommates, and DJ Fox, another one of my roommates. So both great guys, and we got along well. It was cool to have some other high-level athletes kind of hanging out in the tent and just talking about strategy and the race and the experience, etc. The dinner and breakfast was really good. Dinner, they had a meat option, they had a veggie option. It was like rice and chicken one night, and then the next it was like baked fish and rice, and then some vegetables, etc., and then they had drinks. Breakfast was really good, usually some sort of egg-type product. Again, some sort of a lot of carbs. They had like this whole display full of different breads, croissants and stuff like that, various breakfast breads. So if the food wasn't enough for the main meal, you could like go back up and get seconds and thirds and fourths of like the additional carbs. Plus they had jam and some other stuff and some honey to kind of spread on there if you wanted even more carbs. But it was pretty cool being like the race venue and the festival is right there. And then literally like across this little dirt road is all of the tents. So it was cool to be like really close to the race venue. You didn't have to worry about waking up early on time. You didn't have to worry about travel to the race venue. You didn't have to worry about like dragging your stuff like at World's Toughest, like that half a mile long drag to the start line or anything like that. You were just like literally right there, right across the road. For any of my military veterans, it brought me back some flashbacks of traveling to and from Iraq when we had layovers in Kuwait. So much better experience as far as like the tents were nicer, access to electricity was nicer, but just kind of the setup and the feel of it, kind of being out in the desert in a bunch of tents and then having the bathroom a short walk away in these container housing units. So they had a male and female bathroom separated. You obviously go to the one you belong to there, and then they also had showers. The showers were individual stalls with an additional toilet in there, so a lot of times if the main bathrooms were full, people started using the showers, using the toilets in there. Interestingly enough, the showers were co-ed, but again, they're individual stalls, so once you like go in there and close the door, it's not like you're seeing anyone else, no one else can see you, there's no like ability to look through. Just that was really interesting, being Saudi Arabia, which is known for being like very conservative. So speaking of which, if you're not tracking Saudi Arabia's history, they are very conservative, right? So it wasn't until summer of 2018 that women were even allowed to drive in the country. And then a year later in 2019, the country's opened for tourism. So I was expecting it to be like hyper conservative, like we still haven't even gotten used to that idea of having others in the country. Now, previously, my understanding was closed to tourism because, again, it is a holy site because Mecca and Medina, Islam's two holiest cities, are in the country. So they kind of extended that policy to the entire country. So if you didn't have business in Saudi Arabia, you probably weren't going to travel there, right? So unless you worked for like an oil company or another foreign company that was having actual business in Saudi Arabia, you weren't going to be there. But again, 2019, they opened things up and they're trying to bolster tourism. You know, I think Saudi Arabia, just like the other smart Gulf Cooperation Council countries, so United Arab Emirates, Kuwait, Qatar, etc. They're trying to bolster tourism, and they have a lot of oil money right now, so they're taking the time now to invest in tourism by doing things like building gigantic structures, having major events, having extreme sporting events. I know Red Bull does a lot of stuff in Dubai, and I think after going there and kind of experiencing it, I think this was the driving force, again, just my two cents, behind doing the largest prize purse in OCR history in Saudi Arabia. I was in Al Ula, so not someplace that I'd even heard of, but it is kind of like on the western side of Saudi Arabia, kind of halfway up the country. And for those of you who like history stuff, I thought it was really cool being in the same area that T.E. Lawrence was. So if you're familiar with Lawrence of Arabia, being in that same physical area as he was, you know, 100 plus years ago. And for those of you who've read my book, know that I had some other kind of crossover points in history with T.E. Lawrence, essentially, or people linked to him. In 2008, I helped recover King Faisal, so one of the guys Lawrence of Arabia worked with. I helped recover King Faisal's car from, the Iraqi army recovered it from Al-Qaeda in Iraq. I went over and checked on it at the Iraqi army compound, so I was one of the first Americans to see it. Got a picture of that in my book. It's like a 1930 Rolls-Royce Phantom, still in great condition, completely crazy. I have no idea where it ended up, but it was at the Iraqi army compound in Mahmoudiya in 2008. I got a picture of me standing in front of it. I got to like poke my head in the car and kind of touch it. It was pretty wild. And as a fan of T.E. Lawrence, Lawrence of Arabia, the movies, and I've also read his book, Seven Pillars of Wisdom, I thought that was just a really cool experience, not only to have those personal interactions, but also like physically be in the same area that he was in. As someone who's traveled through the Middle East, I thought the environment was really cool. So the ground was very similar to some of the other Middle Eastern countries, kind of dirt and sand and kind of sections of loose and kind of hard-packed. But what was unique was they had these like giant mountains of rock kind of throughout the off the side of the road and then on course. We'll talk about that. But I hadn't seen that anywhere else in the Middle East. So that was unique. It was something where I can look at that trip and be like, okay, well, this is definitely from Saudi Arabia. And, you know, look at a picture of like the environment and be like, not one of the other Middle Eastern, half a dozen or so Middle Eastern countries I've been to. Adjusted to the time zone pretty well the first night, just because I was so tired from traveling. But I also brought Hammer Nutrition REM caps with me, essentially as melatonin pills. And if I was having, I don't take that when I fall asleep, because usually I don't have trouble falling asleep. I save it for when I wake up in the middle of the night and have trouble falling back asleep. Take one of those pills, maybe put on an audiobook or something, try to drift back off to sleep before wake up for the next day. So now it's Friday, the day before the race, and they arranged buses for us into town, which is super cool. So we essentially took buses. They left every 2 hours into town and, you know, every 2 hours on the off hour, essentially coming back. And I went into Al Ula, right into downtown, and we kind of explored there. Also, interesting note, I always kept calling it Al Ula, because that's the way most Arabic countries are spelled. It's like A-L space, or cities are spelled A-L space and then the word. But the tourism bureau and the way I see it written everywhere was Al Ula, like written as one word. And I wonder if that is a purposeful marketing move, because Al Ula sounds Middle Eastern and Al Ula almost sounds Polynesian to me. It sounds a little more like a vacation spot. So I do like the marketing move. I think that's a good move, Al Ula. But yeah, we went into town, and they have a kind of a new section of town, and they had an old section of town. The group I was with, we ended up exploring the new section and then the old section. But again, because I had gone by myself, it was super cool to just kind of, you just made friends with like random groups of athletes. So Anthony Kunkel, one of the super fast World's Toughest Mudder guy, ended up hanging him with out with him a lot. Lachlan Danzy, winner of True Grit Enduro several times, ended up hanging out with him a lot. Andrew Losh, as I mentioned, hanging up with him a lot. I got to see Deanna Blegg. So if you're not familiar, Blegg mitts are named after Deanna Blegg, and she has not raced for several years, and she came back out for this event, and it was really cool to see her back out on the course. Also find it kind of funny, because for those people who are newer to the obstacle course racing world, they had no idea who she was, and she's one of like the old school OGs, legends of the sport, that came back out to race. Anyway, we walked around the new section of the town, kind of pretty standard kind of Middle Eastern town. We kind of got lost for a little bit. Ended up finding some camels in a pen. Took some pictures of them. Cut through some guys like palm groves back into the main area, and then explored the old section of town. The old section of town is a area of like excavated ruins from like 700 BC. So they've got those ruins that are, you can't walk through, but you can kind of like go into like lookouts and look over. And then they've got like a, it looks like a touristy section that's kind of made to look old, but they've all got all these little shops, these like little touristy shops and food shops and cafes, etc. And I think at night it gets really hopping, really, really exciting. We were there during the day, so we only caught a little bit of it. But that was cool, just kind of walk around and hang out. We stopped by a coffee shop and sat down and started talking to one of the Saudis who had spent a couple years in America and started asking him questions. So we got to pick his brain about, you know, what's it like, the culture, and how are people reacting to the change in, you know, allowing women to drive and then allowing the country open to tourism. And I think just like any other country, when there's change, there's a section of the population that does not like the change. And there's a section of the population that's like, it's about time. And there's kind of a middle section who's like, yeah, I can go either way. So that was pretty cool. Just kind of getting to pick his brain about all sorts of Saudi Arabian culture. And as someone who'd been to America, he could understand some of the differences. So he could help kind of point those out, having experience in both worlds. Walking around town, I was wearing long pants and a t-shirt. Just because I know in the Middle East, a lot of the men don't wear shorts, even if it's warm. So I was trying to be a little more respectful of their culture. You know, we did have guys and girls walking around with short shorts and like more like tank tops type stuff. As far as I know, there was no kind of issues in town. I did hear of one person out of the, you know, 50 or so people I talked to that essentially got shoulder checked by someone and got like a nasty look from someone. I think it was a male. But, you know, I have no idea any of the context behind that. But other than that, the entire weekend, never had one problem. I don't recall receiving any nasty looks. Everyone I talked to was super friendly. So overall, just like a really cool experience and a really felt very welcoming. As I said on the previous podcast, you know, once you're their guests, people are extremely nice to you. And it seemed like at least that section of town has gone all in, right? They are committed to the tourism. They are committed to welcoming outsiders. So that was a pretty cool experience. For those that had more time in the country and or took the time to plan out a little bit better ahead of time, there was some other pretty cool sites you could see. There's something called Elephant Rock. It is a naturally occurring rock formation that looks like a giant elephant. I'm told the entire kind of country kind of looks very similar to the American Southwest with like all these giant rock formations. There's also a concert hall, which is completely covered in mirrors. I think there's a movie that it's in, but it's like a really cool image. I did not actually get to go out there, but also a kind of a cool thing if you had the time to go see. And I'd say the last big tourist attraction that people I know went and see was called Hegra. So anyone who is familiar with Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, that is filmed at a place called Petra in Jordan. Different site, but it looks very similar. That like facade carved into the face of a rock. There's something similar like that in Hegra in Saudi Arabia. And that looks really cool. I wish I would have gotten to see that. That looked like it's a really cool experience. But like, not only is it carved into the side of the mountain, like the one in Petra, Jordan, but there's also ones with like giant freestanding rocks. And then again, there's this facade carved into it. Looks like, I mean, it's just crazy looking. So those are the kind of big ones. We ate essentially lunch in town and then caught a bus back into the camp there for dinner. When we got back, we got to check in for the race. So again, taking away some of the stress, being on site, getting to check in a day early so you don't have to worry about packet pickup or anything like that. All done the day before. Very convenient, very nice. You know, on my personal side, my friends, the Four Locos, one of their guys, Elliot Rube, was still recovering from an ultra, so he was feeling a little bit off, and they asked me to step in. They had given me a warning about it about 2 months ago, and they said, would you be interested in stepping in? And I said, yes, just let me know. Just, you know, give me essentially like a couple hours notice so I can like mentally prepare myself for it. And the day before the race, I was like, hey, if you need me to step in, just let me know. And then they were like, yeah, we want you to step in. So I think Elliot still ended up having a good race. He just felt like his leg turnover wasn't going to be there. So I think he still ended up running like 70K, which is still really good. But I ended up filling in for him with a team with Jake Ramsby. That's who I ended up running with. And then Christian Brown Johnson, and then Scotty Campbell. Night before the race, it actually ended up raining, so it was like one of 10 times it rains in Saudi Arabia each year. I think I can count on like two hands the number of times I can recall it raining in the Middle East. But yeah, that caused a slight delay. Again, if you're not used to getting rain, you're not going to be like, things aren't going to be set up to handle that. Long story short, they pushed the start time back an hour. The teams were supposed to start at like 30 minutes and then an hour later, but instead they pushed everyone back to the same start time, which I actually liked better. I thought that was fine. No issues. They was talking about them cutting the race short. That ended up not being true. It was still a full 8-hour plus an hour buffer race. pit area. They ended up having tables set up. My understanding is, like, initially there were no tables set up, and by the time we got out there to, like, actually set things up for the race, they had tables set up for everyone and spaces to sit down. So I thought the pit area was fine. No complaints there. They gave us two timing chips, one for each shoe. And then on top of that, if you were on a team, there was also like a team timing chip. So they had multiple redundancy layers of timing chips. There was a start timing mat, there was a finish timing mat, and then there was two timing mats on course. You know, with that much prize money being given away, it was nice to see them take the extra effort to make sure things were being tracked. I do know there was some issues with the actual timing, like the computer system, as far as like being able to filter the data. So all the times and the splits were recorded, but they weren't able to be displayed quickly and accurately in the middle of the race. This was causing some complaints back in the United States because people were trying to follow the race. They were asking for the timing tracking link, which wasn't available. And people reported like not getting a lot of updates as far as like what was going on course. I can't speak too much of that. I know Matt B. Davis from Obstacle Racing Media was out there. I watched him do a whole bunch of interviews. I think he was uploading them to YouTube, or he had a stream going on YouTube. I'm honestly not sure. At that point, I was focusing on my race. I wasn't worried about the live stream. I did do a bunch of coverage beforehand, so if anyone wants to go back and look at that, it's on the OCR report, and it's also on OCR Buddy, a lot of that pre-race stuff. If anyone wants to see some pre-race travel stuff, you can go to my Instagram page, UltraOCRMan. All right, let's get to the race itself. So 10K laps, mix of hard-packed sand and kind of loose sand, about 20 obstacles over the 6.2 miles. They were, compared to American obstacles, pretty easy. Now, the reason I went on everyone went on the trip was the prize money, the level of competition, and the experience. It was not the obstacles. That being said, this is probably like Saudi Arabia's 10th obstacle course race. So for being 10 deep in obstacle course racing, I think their obstacles were pretty good, to be honest with you. The only fallible kind of upper body obstacle was essentially a set of rings that were super grippy. So they were wooden rings. It was really nice. Had really good grips on them. The only time that was actually a fairly challenging obstacle was at one point the wind was whipping really hard and the rings were actually moving. So it was actually, you had to like time it to grab the rings. But other than that, it was kind of a standard series of tough mudder type obstacles. Low crawl, a slant wall. They had vertical walls, Berlin walls. They had an elevated balance beam, a tube that went uphill and then into water after going through a low crawl. They had what would be mud mile, but because there's the water would just absorb into the sand. It was just like these like sand pits. Electroshock therapy. They had crybaby, the tear gas obstacle. Wasn't much tear gas in there. The electroshock therapy obstacle, we tried crawling through on the first lap it was open, and they yelled at us. They're like, no, you can't crawl. You have to run through. I was like, okay. So we ended up standing and running through. At one point, the wind was really pushing it, and all the wires were like off to one side, so you could just run up the left side without getting touched. So that was actually pretty nice. The low crawl obstacle under the barbed wire, we also tried to roll through it, which is the faster technique. Volunteers also yelled at us at one point. They're like, you can't roll. You got to crawl. You got to army crawl. I was like, okay. So we adjusted our technique there. It was just funny seeing some of the nuanced differences on what the volunteers have been briefed and what the kind of rules were allowed. The one thing I'll say, though, is all the obstacles were manned. And for being volunteers on obstacles, most of them seem to be taking their job pretty seriously. So the fact that I got corrected for the wires and the fact that we got corrected for the low crawl is a good sign, making sure people were following the rules. As the 8-plus-hour event drew on, you do have some people kind of like lackadaisically checking their phones and not really paying attention. But for the most part, I thought the obstacle attendance and the enforcement of rules was above the standard of what I've experienced at most toughest or endurance events for Tough Mudder in the United States. Instead of doing the penalties at the obstacles, we had a wristband with 5 wristbands on. And if you failed one of the obstacles, you had to remove the wristband. And when you came back into the pit area, there was 2 different people checking your obstacle wristbands. And if you failed something, then you had to go off and do a penalty off to the side. I'm not sure what the penalties were. I don't know anyone that failed any. But again, it looked like they had good enforcement as far as people double-checking the wristbands and then also making sure people were actually doing the obstacle to standard, or the obstacle penalty to standard, rather. Race was fast, man. I mean, people were flying. The one interesting thing, though, is normally the sprint lap, we usually do like the first person on the first lap is a sprint lap. They had some interesting rule where like you couldn't get a sprint lap until all of the obstacles were open. So that affected who was going to win the sprint lap. So I had picked Anthony Kunkel as my pick for the sprint lap. due to just kind of the way, I'm not sure who came across the line first on that first lap, but just kind of the way things buffed out, he was not the winner. Fastest lap was France, Gregory Basilico, lap time of 39:20, and women was Ida Mathilda Rubens-Steensgaard, lap time of 47:57. And again, that's for a 10K lap. I'm not sure of, again, all the position changes, but I think for the majority of the race, the men's lead, top three, were kind of sitting in the three, whether they were trading some places in there. But I think the top 10 kept getting shaken up with people taking over spots and falling back in spots. I think my prediction was Mark Botras, Ryan Atkins, and Jonathan Albon in the top three. I think I picked Mark to go first, and then maybe John or Ryan second. I can't remember who I picked. Anyway, the result was John Albon 1, Ryan Atkins 2, Mark Botras 3. So it was close, wrong order. I also said we weren't going to know about half the names in the top 10. Looking at the top 10, I see it looks like an Italian, a French, I'm not sure what, Spain, British. Long story short, I recognize exactly 5 of the top 10 names. Also, shout out to Joshua Reed, my tent mate, who ended up coming in 8th. And DJ Falk, my other tent mate, who ended up coming in 12th. On the women's side, I think I picked Lindsay Webster and Chris Rogalski as kind of being near the top of that pile. Predictions weren't quite as good as that. I'm not as familiar with all the females and how fast they are in relation, just because I don't pay attention because they're not my direct competition. But Lindsay ends up finishing 5th, and Chris Rogalski ended up finishing 7th. Top woman was Elisa Petrova, I think from Russia. Second was Nicole Miracle from America. Third was Yanka Pepova from Switzerland. I also said we weren't going to be able, I wasn't like the American OCR athlete or follower would not recognize half the names for the women in the top 10. And I recognize exactly 5 names out of those. So Nicole Miracle, I recognize Lindsay Webster, Ulrik Evensen, Chris Rogalski, and Katie Knight. Don't recognize the other 5 names. Quick shout out to Deanna Blegg, again, maker of Blegmich, ended up finishing 13th with 70K. Which is pretty amazing. Not the youngest athlete out there, but definitely putting in some serious mileage, showing she's still a legend here in the sport. On the four-man race, the team everyone thought was going to win was the A-team, which is Vijay Jones' team. They ended up finishing 3rd. And if you would have told me Four Locos, the team I joined, would have finished 1 spot behind Vijay's team, I would have been like, cool, so we came in 2nd. But no, we came in 4th. So Four Locos ended up coming in 4th. The top 2 teams were European Elite and Ajman team in 2nd. Again, I'm not going to try to identify all these flags. There's a whole bunch of mixture of flags in there. We got some Russia. We got some Switzerland. We got South Africa. Got a UAE. We got, it looks like, Portugal. Vijay in 3rd place. His team was the top team with an American. The top team with more than one American was Four Locos, the team I was on, or the top North American team was Four Locos. So we ended up finishing 90K, and the winner, the top a podium, all finished 100K, except for first got 110K. On the two-man side, real quick, I said Vijay's team was going to win, came in 3rd, and I said Four Locos was going to come in 3rd or 4th, so I was kind of accurate on that. For the team of 2 podium, Team France in 1st with 110K, 2nd place was Veerman, Tyler Veerman's team, and Brown's team. That's who I thought was going to win. They came in 2nd, and then Storm Egypt ended up coming in 3rd, and they tied for Alpine Blitz. The 3rd-4th tie, there was some confusion on the course. I'm not sure of all of the details. I think there was some questionable rules or something like that. Long story short, 3rd and 4th, I think, agreed to share the 3rd place podium spot. If anyone wants to know more about the experience, there's an article I wrote for the OCR report. Go check it out. It's called Tough Mudder Alula. What was the full experience like? And then if anyone wants to know like nuances of the race, the obstacles, the terrain, elevation, etc. like that, that article is on OCR Buddy. You can go check that out there. Wasn't much elevation change. It was pretty flat, so it was fast. There was some sections of soft sand, which kind of sucked. And there was one section of shade that was about 50 feet long. You ran between these 2 giant rocks. Luckily, it was overcast and cool all day, so it was actually a really nice day to run. Had it been sunny, that would have been a different race. I think you would have seen mileages a lot lower. You would have seen people crashing hard out on the course, baking in the sun. But the weather was beautiful for running. They did end up having a leaderboard on the big screen, but it was only like 4 people deep, 4 or 5 people deep. So you if you weren't in those top like five-ish, you didn't really know where you were. And the age group podiums weren't published at the time, at the end of the race, or at any point during the race. You had to essentially wait until Wednesday after the race again, due to the timing chip issues, to get the results of the age group. So if anyone wants to see those, again, that's you can go to head over to the OCR report and see that those results up on their Instagram page. The kind of standard pictures shows you how everyone did, what their mileages were. My understanding is they ended up giving prize money for age group podiums as well. So for those that were not in competition for overall, a lot of great opportunity to win money at this race. And then just the opportunity just to toe the start line with another amazing group of athletes. Very similar to that feeling at World's Toughest, but it was like being in the elite corral at World's Toughest, but there's no other corrals behind you. So it felt like a private event for the elite of OCR, which was just like a really cool experience. There were, again, anyone could come. The only person I saw from, like, I would say the quote-unquote Tough Mudder community is Joe Perry. He was out there. I mean, Joe's competitive in his age group, so I don't know if I would even he's kind of riding that line between, you know, the Tough Mudder community and, like, the competitive level. But he's kind of the only face I recall seeing that's not, like, one of, like, the stereotypical elite guys that just comes up for the competitive events. Afterwards, everyone head back to their rooms and kind of changed or showered. There was a long line at the showers. I ended up just changing into some dry clothes and waiting, and then showering later that night. Ate dinner, woke up the next morning. They did an award ceremony, which is cool. It was real quick. Just kind of, again, everyone's tired and exhausted from the race, and some people were still dirty, and they just kind of ran through the awards. But it was cool that the experience doesn't end, right? Like other races, you do the race, and then you go back to your hotel room, and you're just kind of like miserable in your hotel room, like while your body's recovering. It was cool to be still in the race environment, right, where you're hanging out with other athletes. Everyone's going to go through the same experience. Just, again, I can't say enough about the experience. Just so it's kind of a really cool thing. Then, again, they gave us bus rides back to the airport, and we took the bus ride to the airport with all the other athletes. Very convenient. Again, there's not that many flights coming in and out of Alula, so they could provide transportation for everyone, again, making it really convenient. We had a long layover in Doha, Qatar, and I have lived in that area for a couple of months previously. So when we landed, I ended up linking up essentially with the guys from Four Locos, Chris Roglowski, and we ended up exploring Doha, Qatar together. I had been there before, so I knew kind of which areas to go to. We basically caught a taxi ride downtown and walked around the market there again. So at this point, Four Locos and some of the other people that didn't sit in the airport in Dubai, one trip they got to do Dubai, Qatar, and Saudi Arabia all for one trip, thanks to these like long 8 to 12 hour layovers. All pretty cool experiences. Then flew back to the United States. I thought, usually when I fly back to the United States, I can adjust to the time zone real quickly. I think the 8 hour race that exhausted me really messed up my internal clock, because I've never had that much trouble adjusting back to a time zone. I felt like I was dragging butt all week, and finally, where it's about a week later, I finally feel like kind of back to normal again, where I'm not waking up in the middle of the night confused, ready to run again. Will they hold the event next year? They kept saying that this is kind of just the start of things, so look forward to more events in Alula, or maybe more events from Tough Mudder Arabia. There was rumors they wanted to do a series, so maybe next year it'll be multiple races, maybe spread out over the year, or maybe it'll be like 2 weekends in a row, kind of like OCRWC does, where it's like, you know, 2 short races one weekend, and then maybe the next week in a long race, because that would be really cool, where you end up essentially staying for like a full week. You get to do some of the more touristy stuff and have to worry a little bit less about tiring your legs out the day before a race, and then you get to see more of the country. So we'll see how it kind of pans out. I know Obstacle Racing Media was doing some coverage during the event. I had some friends say they had some issues getting some of their coverage. Again, I'm not quite sure what the deal was there. I just know I saw Matt Davis interviewing people. I know I did an interview for him in the middle of the race between laps, and I watched other people in the venue go up and talk to him, and again on camera covering down on some of the event. All right, I think that kind of wraps it up. I'm sure we'll talk about it again on a future episode. I'm going to have some of the people who actually were at the event come on and talk about some other different stuff, and then also probably get to share some of their opinions on traveling to the Middle East and kind of that whole experience. If anyone's looking to do an Ultra OCR, whether it be Tough Mudder Infinity, Toughest Mudder, World's Toughest Mudder, etc., make sure you pick up the Ultra OCR Bible, the only book on ultra endurance obstacle course racing, get you ready. I've training plans in there like 12 to 16 weeks, so now would be a great time to pick it up, to consume the information, and then actually start putting those training plans into effect. On top of that, it's sectioned out, right? So if you have a couple weeks to train, and then you have to like taper for a different race, and then have to train for a couple weeks, it's kind of sectioned out where you can break it into cycles and work it into your actual race schedule. So check out the Ultra OCR Bible. You want to hear about some of the other crazy stuff I've done, you head over to teamstrengthspeed.com. My book's on there, Ultra OCR Man. Link to my documentaries on there. I've got my free documentary, OCR Everest, up on YouTube. That's 10 minutes long. The pay for one's about 10 bucks, about 24 minutes. That one's called Ultra OCR Man. Again, all links are on teamstrengthspeed.com. Anyone who's going to Toughest Mudder, World's Toughest Mudder, any sort of cold weather race or endurance race, Bleg mitts are available on our site. Same exact Bleg mitts that Deanna sells from Australia, except you can get them from America in 3 days and not 3 weeks. So I buy them in bulk from her and resell them here in the United States. So easier for you, easier for everyone involved. I'll drop a bunch of links in the show notes down below. Check it out. Order some books. Buy some Bleg mitts. Check out Manscaped. Check out Yoked. And then also check out the feed. Anyone who's doing any sort of endurance racing, you're going to want to shop at the feed. They have a Hammer Nutrition product, which is what I use for all my endurance fueling. But they also have all sorts of waffles and gummies and protein shakes and casein and pre-workout. It is like bodybuilding.com, but for endurance athletes with better products, like cleaner products, better fuels, a wider range of endurance products. I can't recommend the feed enough. I'm going to drop that link down below. Please head down there and click it. That helps us get support for the podcast. It helps us keep producing episodes, helps us keep bringing content for you guys. All right, we will see all of you in the next episode. Out.